Well, good morning. It's always a moment as a preacher where you stand up and look back and lay eyes on the congregation. Sweet moment. Good to see you. If anyone's here for the first time this morning, so am I. I have been looking forward to this day, and I haven't preached in 5 months, and certain withdrawal symptoms have been evident. You're sitting a long way back, you know. There's a pulpit up there, but you're all way back there in the safe zone. So I'm grateful for a sound system. Jesus told stories, and precious stories to describe things that are beyond easy understanding. You can get all conceptual and use big words and have flow charts and things. Or you can tell a story, and in the dynamic and in the tension and the drama, things are illustrated. He got beyond the limits of words. And part of the reason he did this, I think, is because stories have a way of infecting us. They get under your skin. They get behind your defenses. They get inside and they start to work. And this is a story that's been working in me all my life, and it's still working. It's a story that isn't exhausted. So, I assume that the story is familiar. So I'm not going to sort of walk through it in great depth. There is so much to bring to it, so much that could be focused on. But I want to just ask a question, and that's going to be our orientation. What do you think is the heart of the story? Where in the story is the central moment? What is the moment that Jesus, as it were, has the spotlight on and he wants us to see? Just for yourself. Just think. Maybe what's the most exciting bit for you? And then the question is, Is that not just a moment, but is it a moment you are living out of? It's the moment I am living out of. The story isn't just information or entertainment. It's something to be rooted in to the point where it becomes part of our story. And our story is rooted in that story. So, back to the question. What do you think is the central moment, the moment that Jesus is leading people to and wanting to drop like a sort of a bomb in our awareness? Just for yourself, because for me, it's that moment that the prodigal comes home. I'm going to suggest that moment illuminates everything that Jesus is wanting to say in this story and beyond. It's the lost son coming home to discover the Father's love. And if I could have the images up, I've only got 3 images for this message, but that's the moment that I think brings this whole story to light. This is when everything changes. This is gospel central. This is ground zero. This is the atomic splitting that Jesus wants to drop within us so that we see everything differently. Especially seeing God differently. So there's more than just personal taste involved in my saying that that's the moment. You know, in Luke's gospel, a little bit of context here. Chapter 19, verse 10. The Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. It's a capital statement in that gospel. This is what Jesus was about. But he had anticipated that in the chapter we're in today by telling 3 lost and found stories. So we've had the lost sheep, the lost coin, and now the lost son. And as read today in the first 3 verses, Jesus told these stories, again, not just for entertainment, but for he was very strategic into a specific context for a reason. Verses 1 to 3. He told these stories because there were people who had problems with how he was behaving. And how? What was he doing? Well, he was receiving and welcoming and feasting or eating with, well, unholy people. People that were clearly marked as unholy in some way. Prostitutes, public sinners, the outcasts. And the people who had a problem with them were the religious professionals, us lot. Scribes and Pharisees, as they're described. And the reason for this is because their model of holiness was that the way you attain holiness is by separating yourself from what's unholy. It's a universal human model. You have holy and you have unholy, and you attain holiness by separation. Now, there is a place to be separated from what is evil, absolutely. But Jesus wasn't playing by those rules. Rather than maintaining his holiness by keeping separation, he was closing distance. He was actually receiving and welcoming the unholy. So, in polite terms, the message to Jesus was, "What are you doing? Please explain." And he explains with these three stories. And of course, his basic message in these three stories is, you need to understand God's heart for the lost. That's the central message here in these three stories. Understand that. God is more interested in closing the gap than in keeping quarantine or some sort of managed isolation, as Barbara and I had for 2 weeks when we came back to New Zealand. So, that's what the story is about. And Jesus is wonderfully patient in telling us, you know, three stories. You didn't get the first one? Okay, I'll tell you another one. And another one. Now, just before I get into this, just a contemporary name. Does the name Rosaria Butterfield mean anything to anyone? Okay. Well worth looking up. She's all over YouTube. So what's her story? Her story is that a while ago she was a tenured American professor of literature and living in a lesbian relationship. She was befriended by a Presbyterian minister who just responded to her online and started engaging politely, which led to a dialogue and several years of her coming to his family home, becoming part of that family, and a long discussion, a long dialogue. Well, she came to faith. Life transformed. Look it up online. But it's the punchline I want to just inject into this sermon. She says, and maybe she's speaking to a lot of the Christian community, she says, a lot of people think I was saved from being a lesbian. She said, no, I was saved from being lost. I was saved from being lost. And whenever I think about that, I think we Christians aren't always that clear either on God's heart for the lost and what being lost is really all about. So Jesus told those three stories for the benefit of the scribes and the Pharisees. But in my heart at times, I think we Christians need to hear them too. So, that's sort of by way of lead up. So, just to check out the story, without going every detail, but a few of the high points. Especially when I touch contact or make contact with the world today. So the younger son. The younger son has a map for life. And what I think is in there is live like there's no tomorrow. Live for pleasure. Get what you can when you can. Philosophically, if you want to get Greek about it, he's Epicurean, hedonist, he's consumerist, and quite contemporary. He is all around us. The younger son, living by that map, Life is now. Get it. Squeeze it. Get what you can. I want it all, and I want it now. He does not particularly value relationships. People should be fun. So as there is precious little fun on home with the farm, with Pa and Big Brother, I'm out of here. He's so contemporary. He's so with us today in that early phase. So, he demands inheritance without relationship. And curiously, the father gives it to him. Is that what you want, son? That's an insight into God too, not to be lost. And the first people who heard the story, this would have been a moment of great shock, horror. To say to a patriarch, your father, I want the money and I want it now. It's the equivalent of saying, you're more used to me dead than alive. They would have been stunned. Where is the story going that this could happen and play out like that? So, you know what happens next. He blows it on high and fast, loose living. The funds run out, the famine comes, and he ends up feeding pigs on a farm. Shock horror number two, and you know why. Pigs are absolutely non-kosher. There, in terms of holiness, you maintain distance, you have nothing to do with them. And here he is on a pig farm, feeding the things. So in terms of how low he's gone from being the son of a patriarch to feeding pigs in a few verses. C.S. Lewis famously said, pain is God's megaphone. And on that pig farm, hungry, alone, rock bottom, the pain begins to speak. And the good thing is, he begins to hear. So we read about verse 17, he comes to his senses. Or other translations, he comes to his right mind. Oh friends, what does it take to come to our right mind? And we live in a world that is not in its right mind. It took that experience. But the good thing is, it happens. It happens. And so, he starts to form a plan. It's not a perfect plan, but it's sufficient for what needs to happen next. And he starts to think, I need the mercy of my father. The servants at home, the tenants, the lodgers, all that lot, they have it better than I have it here. If I go and make the right appeal, if I say the right words, if I am suitably contrite, if I offer some appeasement, just might get mercy. And he starts walking. It's a story. This is not one of those sermons where I put up a map and said, he walked from here to there. How long? I don't know. How long is a piece of string? But I imagine as he walked, he's practicing this message. He's anticipating that moment where he will be face to face with his father and have a few seconds to earn or to achieve the mercy that he longs for, because it's no fun being hungry. It's no fun being without a home or lodging. And so he starts that journey. We're coming to the heart of the story, aren't we? We're coming, well, at least what I think is the heart. He's coming to that revelation of what the scribes and the Pharisees, and not just them, but so many of us, need to be reminded of again and again. The Father's heart for the lost and for us. And so he's on his way back. Who sees who first, I don't know. I think it's the father. Father scanning the horizon. He knows the driveway up to the farm. There's that figure. He walks. Could it be? Yes. And a bomb goes off. A bomb goes off. That's expressed in the English word compassion. But the heart of God erupts in the Father for what he sees coming. This is what he has been hoping, waiting, anticipating. He's been living with the dread that maybe he's dead. Maybe he's just been finished off somewhere in some foreign place by who knows who. Here he is. He's alive. And the bomb goes off. And then Jesus tells a joke. Or at least a lot of commentators suggest it's a joke. He runs. Middle Eastern patriarchs do not run. In other church settings, when I've worn robes, I've sometimes illustrated how ridiculous this is. Hitch them up and run up and down the aisle. You see ankles, knees, knobbly knees. You see all sorts of things. But the patriarch, I don't know what sort of robe it was, but he's an older man, he's in a robe, and he's running. Anyone who saw this would have been very surprised. Whether it was a shuffle or a trot or he full gallop, I don't know. But he's off. The son must have realized, there he comes, this is Dad. What's going to happen now? But this was not what he'd expected. What he had prepared himself for was a cool moment. Maybe being even left at the gate to wait. Maybe an interrogation. Maybe an accounting. He was not expecting Dad running towards him like this. The meeting. And the story tells us that the father just embraces him and kisses him. Now, my father's here. He's embraced me at times. And I know that it sort of means he's talking like this. But, you know, it's all very critical. Even how, whatever the experience was, he still pumps out those words that he's been preparing. Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. He came to his senses in the pig pen partially. He came to his senses enough to know it's time to go home. But he was playing or reading from the wrong script, because reality was way beyond mercy. He was being hugged and kissed, and he was still trotting out this diplomatic speech of appeasement, as if the form of words was important. The father isn't on that page at all, and he doesn't even respond. He doesn't even pick up the issues or the message. He's already on the next page. Quick, bring some robes. You lot, stop gawking at this. Bring some robes, shoes, a ring. He is already about restoring the son as his son, clothing him, decorating him, and celebrating him. Friends, I'm passionate about this. Because this is what Jesus, I believe, wanted us to get. That moment. And to live in it and to live out of it. It's the heart of the gospel. Who is God? What is God like? So, having said that, looking at it from another angle, this story describes that central, most wonderful space of the gospel. And if we are to imagine this as a space that we could mark out on the floor, it's a space we need to stand in and invite people in by any which way. He made good progress, as I mentioned before, in the pig farm to get home. But to get to this place, there needs to be some sort of coming to a right mind, some sort of revelation, recognition, realization that God is good and worthy of a return, worthy of coming back to. And there needs to be a hope that at least there's mercy in readiness for the total surprise of grace. You all know the definition, don't you? Mercy is about not getting the punishment you deserve. Grace is about getting the favor you don't deserve. So, what I'm passionate about is people meeting God in that space. And over many years, I've had the privilege of seeing that again and again and again. And then watching the years of transformed living that come from that. I'm passionate about that. So as Barbara, come here to minister within you and among you and broader afield, that is the place we want to be rooted in. That is the target zone, as it were, in all things. So to bring this into the room, well, just one little aside first. The story goes on, doesn't it? There is an eldest son. That's okay, just stay. There is an eldest son, and he doesn't get it. But the tragedy is, the father had two sons who didn't get it. The younger son, it took all that drama, all that being lost, all that coming back before he got it. And I suggest he was actually born again when he came home. He was really born as a son now, no longer a tenant or a lodger or a servant. But the older son, he didn't know himself as a son either. And he'd constructed a whole other economy and a mode of being and doing that was, well, sad. There's more of that in the church than outside. So again, it's this space, it's this process. There needs to be a coming from being lost to being found. So I asked Barbara to come and stand with me because this is a joint statement, really, because I'm preaching, but it's leading up to a description of what we hope for this church and how this message lands here. So, if we get Jesus and the gospel, we should get this. Where should we put this up? Oh, yes. So, for Barbara and I, as we come with a specific focus for ourselves and St. Matt's, we want to live orientated to this gospel moment in the heart of God. It's like being orientated or radar searching all the time. Where might this be possible? Where might this happen? In our life, in the lives of people we meet, because this is ground zero. We have heard at times what a song described earlier today as the sound of hearts returning to God. Hear the sound of hearts returning to you. I love that lyric. It's kind of poetic, you know. What sort of sound is it? It's a beautiful sound. That's a sound we want to hear. It's a sound that we pray resonates through this church, the building and the people. People finding their way into that space. We could give you names and addresses and telephone numbers of people over decades that we've seen who found their way home and are living out the transformed power. Simply put, we want to see more of that. We've tasted and we want to see more. And now we're here with you. So you can join the dots. We're going to be looking for opportunities to go there. Ourselves, and to draw others in as well. We want this to be a church without elder brothers. Now, if you're an elder brother now, stay around. But there's a transformation to happen. I don't know what the sequel to the story would have been. You know, Jesus ends the story where he ends it. But there must have been a process that went on from there. So, the roles we can play, this is Barbara and I, and you, is to help bring people to their senses. Gently, little at a time, as circumstances allow. How do you do that? Well, I'm trying. You tell the Jesus story, but you can also tell your story, especially where they connect. You talk about your pig pens, you talk about coming home, you talk about the embrace of the Father. So precious, your story, rooted in Jesus' story. It tells people that this is possible. There is an option. There is a heavenly, loving Father waiting for me. We can help people begin or continue their journey home to God if they want to. But the real work, the power, is God's work, isn't it? We can encourage, we can point, we can invite, but it's God who changes hearts in the way that the story describes. Anything you want to add to that?
So.
Okay. We're in agreement, aren't we?
Yes, absolutely.
We have a little house of clergy here. So, so we're going to have a space of a moment for reflection here. The main question I just want to focus you on is, what are you hearing from God now? What is playing in your mind and your heart? Maybe about you personally, maybe about someone you know, maybe about the church, who knows. But what has this ministry of the word stirred in you now? And it's just for you to note. I'm not going to ask you to say anything. What's important is that you don't forget it between now and lunch. So have a moment of reflection, and then I'm going to ask Pete, Bob and Ben to lead us in a version of Amazing Grace, which is so obviously written by someone who walked the story. And we can celebrate that in his words, the power of grace. Brings us home, opens our eyes. So, let's just pray. Lord, as I stop talking, may everyone here have a sense of what your Spirit is saying to their hearts and minds.